The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Horn Family Automotive Studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us, Brad Sesmatt, Sports360AZ.com, White Mountain Radio. Great to be on White Mountain Radio and, of course, on Twitter, at Brad Sesmatt. Hope you had yourself a great sports weekend. I found myself Friday night out at a high school soccer game where a coach wouldn't leave the field after he got a red card. Then I watched NFL playoff stuff, and then I saw Jahi Carson play just horrible for Arizona State. I'm a big Jahi guy, but ASU basketball was disappointing over the weekend. U of A, still number one, still undefeated. We'll be in Tucson. That will be on Thursday's show. On the show today, Albert Breer, stress around the National Football League. Where's Ken Wisenhunt going to end up? What does he think about the Cardinals in the offseason? NFL Network insider Albert Breer, his thoughts on the divisional playoff games over the weekend. He'll join us in about 10 minutes. News and notes, AZ Central sports columnist, my friend Paula Bovin. Her weekly segment, U of A staying perfect. A Arizona State Sun Devil defensive player that is turning pro reportedly. The A-Rod stuff was pretty interesting last night on 60 Minutes. I watched a lot of sports this weekend, and I know that A-Rod, for a lot of you, you're just done. But watching last night and seeing the dude that sold him, the Tony Bosch guy, talking at greater length, I know Pedro Gomez has done some stuff with him. But last night, I'm looking at this guy saying, this is who you tie yourself to when you decide to take things of an illegal substance and this type of character. So we're going to get into that a little bit, too, as the show goes along. Senior Executive Vice President of Everything, Eric Sorensen, did you have a good weekend? Did you do anything fun?
Wasn't bad.
Yeah?
Wasn't bad.
What'd you do, man? Did you do wedding stuff?
Did a lot of wedding stuff.
Oh, God.
Watched a little football.
Try to go in reverse order.
Clean the house.
Look, you handle the wedding. I have to watch sports. I have a job to do. I have to watch Ohio State, Iowa.
That wouldn't really go over well.
Yeah?
Regardless, we have a Facebook question.
What is it?
Do every day.
Sure.
Well, as you know, Brad, the more things change, the more, I guess, they stay the same down in Tucson. Another weekend and another U of A perfect trip, this time to L.A. 20-point win last night over USC. The Cats are 17-0, best start in school history. A couple weeks ago or a month ago, we asked you if U of A would be undefeated or how many losses they'd have coming into the ASU game this Thursday. Well, the answer is zero.
Yeah.
So today, it's a yes or no question. U of A will be undefeated heading into the NCAA tournament, so the remainder of the regular season.
No, I can answer that right.
And throughout the Pac-12 tournament.
You don't even need to put that up. Because, first of all, there's going to be these nitwit ASU fans that are going to say no anyways.
Yeah, we've had a couple already on Facebook that they won't. The undefeated streak won't last past this week.
Yeah, and these are people that aren't thinking rationally or logically anyways. They're just people that if you ask anything U of A, they'll say no, and they'll make a Tucson South joke and all that stuff that's just not funny.
Correct.
You've already had some of those?
A couple.
Yeah.
A couple. And most of the U of A fans that have commented on it, you can go to facebook.com/sports360AZ. A lot of them say, you know what, it would be in the best interest. If the Cats did lose a couple games heading into the tournament, I tend to agree.
I think they are going to lose some games. Last night, well, we'll get into that in a second. The game itself, there's some interesting trends that I'm starting to see now when U of A plays. That's at facebook.com/sports360AZ. I'm not going to talk about Jahi much because I'm not happy with what's going on with him. Let's get you caught up now. Some of the things going on in the world of sports brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains just outside of Pine Top. Can't even imagine the beautiful scenery up there today. You can head on up to the Honda Resort and Casino, get yourself a room, enjoy yourself at the Sunrise Ski Resort, or just being in the great outdoors, but more importantly, pull down that slot, have some big winnings, have some great fun, eat some great food, all at the Honda Resort and Casino. Think ahead now. This coming weekend, you're going to have the championship weekends in the AFC and NFC. Why not take in the game and enjoy yourself at the Honda Resort and Casino? And if you're already up in that neck of the woods, the Honda Resort and Casino, doesn't matter day or night, stop on in, enjoy yourself, have some great food, great fun at the Honda Resort and Casino. So because we are Arizona-centric, today is the Governor Brewer State of the State address today. So I'm going to tie that into sports as the day goes on. This is where the governor stands up and says, everything is great, and the things that aren't great, I'm going to make great. And it's the same thing. It doesn't matter who the governor is every year. I'm going to take it a little bit further than that, because everything's not great when we talk about the state of the state with sports. Arizona State football is, it sounds like, Eric, have you seen a further tweet on this? This happened about 30 minutes ago.
No, nothing new as of, like you said, about a half hour ago.
So Carl Bradford turning pro, he's had 20 sacks and 40 and a half tackles. That's the ninth player on their defense. A tweet was sent out by Liz Mullen on Twitter that he has signed with Athletes First, which means he would be turning pro. NFL.com on Friday had Carl Bradford staying. Everybody's been guessing. This is the week where it has to happen. This is the week where by Wednesday you have to announce. Kadeem Carey, by all accounts, later this week, could be even today, will say, I am leaving Tucson. I would leave Tucson too if I were Kadeem Carey. But this would be a huge blow to Arizona State football, in my opinion, if you look at how the defense has just been performing over the last couple of years and how he's been right in the middle of it. You take away Will Sutton and Chris Young and now Carl Bradford up front. Whew, that's a lot to overcome. That is really a lot to overcome. As mentioned, the Kadeem Carey story, I think we're going to have some resolution on that this week. The wife of Masahiro Tanaka, I've got to bring up in today's show because now she's gotten involved in where the Japanese star pitcher that the Diamondbacks are in on. She's weighing in on this, which I think is kind of interesting. I want to get further into the Cats, though, being number one. And we'll have NFL playoff talk with Albert Breer here in a couple of minutes, so I'll get into the playoffs shortly. But the Cats are now 17-0. It's the best start in the history of the team. I saw them play twice over the weekend against the LA schools, and in both cases, I came away impressed with some of the things about this team. They're going to lose a game or two at some point. Last night, they saw a zone that was a very good zone, I thought, an active zone, and T.J. McConnell was able to work his way through for 19 points. Here's Sean Miller on starting out 17-0 for U of A.
Well, we're really excited about it. We really are. We talked about it, and this is something that I think all of us will cherish because any school record you break at Arizona in the basketball program is a real record because of the great tradition that we have.
So somebody actually asked him, how does it feel to start 17-0? I think it's awful. It's the worst feeling ever. Hey, Sean, I have a question over here in the corner. Can you talk about being 17-0? Our business sometimes. Nick Johnson, the players understand the team's mentality. The big picture, though, is the postseason this year.
When you're recruited here, you come in with a lot of highly rated people, and I mean, you're not going to be the man, or you're going to be one of the men. So, I mean, I think that's kind of implied when you're recruited, if you look at our last few recruiting classes.
Well, and this is a bigger story than just the basketball itself. Over the weekend, U of A landed a verbal commitment from the top point guard in the nation for 2015.
Ho-hum.
Out of Los Angeles. I know, St. John Bosco.
Ho-hum.
Right. It's not even big news for them anymore when they land the top kids here and the top kid there. So, and they, of course, they beat UCLA. So it was a terrific weekend all the way around for the U of A fans. So we'll get into that as the show moves on. UCLA rips up ASU. Jahi Carson just wasn't good this weekend. In fact, watching Jahi Carson the last couple of weeks, he hasn't been very good. Now, is that teams going at Jahi and making him work harder? There's no excuses. There's none. Somebody sent me a note on Twitter last night. It started to take off about, do I think he's making a mistake of turning pro? No, I don't. It may well be that because he made the announcement before the season even started, that he's already checked out to a certain extent. Wouldn't you? Think of it from this standpoint. When you were 20, 21 years of age, and you already said, hey, I'm going to go do this next big life event. I'll give you an example. Eric has checked out for the last 6 months since he decided to get married. And he has been beyond worthless some days in here because he's just glazed over.
What?
I'm not going to say. Yeah. I'm not going to say that Jahi has become worthless. But what I will say is he just seems at times to not be as aggressive. He seems almost distracted with what's going on the floor because he's better than what he's shown. So let's not sit here and sugarcoat this and say it's all UCLA or it's all USC. This Thursday, Jahi Carson goes to Tucson for the last time. He and his Sun Devils will not be favored to beat the U of A. I'm really intrigued by the ASU-U of A matchup this week on many levels, Most notably, you have a superstar, in my opinion, point guard that has underachieved this season. You can have spin doctors and you can have people try to protect him all you want. He hasn't played that well. It's time for him to show up. Somebody paid $119,000 for Christian Laettner's jersey when he hit the shot. I got to get into that as a show. I know if I had $119,000 laying around, I'd go want to buy a jersey of a player who had a shot 15 years ago. Now, it may be a very smart investment. The Suns are on the road tonight. The Lakers are trying to trade Pau Gasol. My guy Shabazz is down in the D League now, which I think is a pretty good story. I kind of like that. I'm going to get into that as the show moves along. And, of course, all the playoff games. And we had a dad come out of the stands at a high school game here in the Valley and put his hands on the opposing team's head coach. And so I've got some thoughts on that as well. But on the other side, we go all NFL playoffs. Albert Breer joins us next, one of the best in the business. NFL Network insider Albert Breer, that's on the other side. You can follow me on Twitter, @BradSesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. Of course, we're on White Mountain Radio. And our website, plenty of content, Arizona-Centric. It's at sports360az.com.
Team's excited about moving on. I mean, this is a tournament, and you know, it's much like a playground basketball. You know, winners stay and play. Winners, losers go home, and we want to keep playing. That's what we wanted. That's what was in their hearts.
Kind of like the playground basketball side of things. Great weekend of NFL football. Brad Sussmath with you, Sports 360 AZ, and of course for Cardinal fans seeing the 49ers and Seahawks. I think we all knew that was the direction it was going to go. And over in the AFC, I don't know of too many people that thought outside of Denver and New England their teams had a shot. So those two teams are stacked up as well. Albert Breer joins us for a couple of minutes, NFL Network insider. I want to talk to him about Wiz, what went on out here this year, and the future on that front. But to start with, and Albert's on Twitter too. He's been with us before, @AlbertBreer. You had a pretty cool little nugget from Shane Vereen to start out with on the Patriots. Is the buzz about LeGarrette Blount and the Patriots rushing for touchdowns, but your story on Vereen and how the injuries benefited the team. Let's start with that point, Albert.
Well, you know, I just think in so many different spots this year, whether it was Aaron Hernandez before the year or, you know, dealing with losing, you know, playing without Rob Gronkowski at the start of the year, getting him back, then suddenly losing him again. You know, Stephen Ridley going through the fumbling problems. They've had to remake themselves offensively a whole bunch of times. And in a lot of these cases, they've had to do it on the fly. And so, you know, what Vereen told me was basically that they've become more adaptable because of it. Now, that doesn't mean that you wouldn't rather have, you know, a healthy Rob Gronkowski out there, that you wouldn't rather have an athlete like Aaron Hernandez in the field, that you wouldn't rather have Stephen Ridley holding onto the ball. All it is to say is that, you know, they're able, the group is able to adapt quicker and is a lot more adjustable now than maybe they would be otherwise. And so, you know, when you see them take on a different look like they did, you know, really week 17 and then on Sunday or on Saturday night against the Colts, that's kind of that adaptability at work. It's an ability to kind of remake who you are week to week. And ultimately, that's what, you know, Belichick tries to do there. You know, they want to be a game plan team every week and be able to kind of morph into whatever that particular matchup demands. You know, but I think that, you know, this year, because they've been through so much of it, you know, they don't have the talent that maybe they've had in past years because of the injuries.
Right.
Because of some other circumstances, but they have an adaptability that obviously is working at a really, really high level right now.
Albert Breer, NFL Network with Brad Sussmath. I think they're the most compelling story, just to see as you peel away the Brady story there's Tom Brady on the field. No, it's Tom Brady actually taking all these players that a year ago at this time, when we heard about the loss of when Wes Welker left, oh my gosh, how Tom Brady's going to be able to replace him. And as you mentioned, all the other off-the-field stuff. I think that's the most compelling storyline of the four teams left. It's the Patriots.
Yeah, you know, look, you know, there is nothing comes close to Hernandez thing. You know what I
right.
mean now? I talked to a couple of those guys about it last week, and you know they're a little bit more open about it now, obviously, than they were 6 months ago. You know, but you know, nothing touches that. You know, so I think that's kind of the starting point here when you talk about the team's resiliency. It's a much bigger thing than football, you know, and obviously there's, this is, you know, you don't want to trivialize it, but, you know, they did all have to, they did all go through it, you know, and to see that happen with a teammate, a guy you were around a lot, you know, then obviously, you know, at the very beginning of their training camp, you know, you're not dealing with ESPN and NFL Network and Fox Sports anymore. You're dealing with Fox News and CNN and Good Morning America. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that part of their resiliency is built on the fact that that was the very first thing that they had to go through, you know, and that they dealt with that. And, you know, you talk about being able to kind of maintain your focus on what's, you know, in front of you and being able to maintain your focus no matter what. On what you need to do that day to make you and the team better. Well, if you can block that out, block out what happened with Aaron Hernandez and find a way to compartmentalize it. You know, they did have to address it, of course, but be able to compartmentalize it, you know, then I think you probably come out of that feeling like, okay, we've got an ability to deal with pretty much anything now. And I think that's kind of what you see there, that mental toughness they have. Because they went through the Hernandez thing at the beginning of the year, you know, I think those players feel like they're ready for whatever's thrown at them.
What can you say 6 days before Brady and Manning meet each other again that won't be said, won't be written? We've seen this. It's so compelling, but we have another Peyton Manning-Tom Brady matchup on our hands.
I don't think that any quarterback rivalry comes close to it. I mean, I just, you know, I think if you look at it, you know, some of these are before I was born, but, you know, I mean, Staubach and Bradshaw in the 70s meeting the Super Bowl a couple times. You know, Bart Starr, you know, going up against, I mean, I don't know, Glenn Dawson in the Super Bowl. You know, even in the 80s when you had kind of that golden age where, you know, Marino Kelly, Marino Montana Elway, you know, Elway Marino. And then, you know, the 90s with Aikman and Young. You know, if you look at every one of those, there's nothing that comes close as far as the frequency that the teams have played. They play basically, those two guys have played basically every year since Brady became the starter in New England, and the importance of all the games. It feels like every time that they play in the regular season, the winner of that game comes out with at least a bye, and oftentimes comes out of that with the number one seed in the AFC. Matt in the playoffs will be now the fourth time. So constantly playing, and they're constantly getting in each other's way when it comes to the ultimate goal of winning a Super Bowl. They both have championships. I mean, I think sometimes we get so caught up in arguing who's better,
yeah,
you know, that we don't realize how unique this is and how it's really probably never, I mean, you know, it'll probably be a long, long time before we ever see another one like this again, where just all those elements have come together. And, you know, we get to see it play out every year, and it's that important every year. And, you know, these guys have been able to maintain that level of play for so long, you know, even through Tom Brady's ACL tear, even through Manning's four neck surgeries. Really, really, really is incredible.
Albert Breer, NFL Network with Brad Sussmack. A couple other questions I'll let you go. I think out here in the West, there's too much made of Harbaugh, Carroll, there's a dislike. I hear that from Seahawks fans. It takes away from on the field. Give me a thumbnail of Seahawks 49ers. It's not nearly as compelling to me as what we're going to see, obviously, with Brady and Manning.
I don't know. I mean, I think that that's the – I mean, if you look at the teams, I think those are probably the two best teams in the league. I mean, I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, the great thing about the Seahawks and the Niners, to me, is they're in a lot of ways mirror images of each other. You know, they both hired coaches from the college ranks. They both have the advantage of playing with quarterbacks who are performing at a high level, but still are on cheap rookie deals. You know, as a result of that, they've got depth all over their roster. They're both strong at the line of scrimmage. They both have hammer tailbacks, guys that set the tone, and Lynch and Gore. They both have big, strong secondaries. I mean, there's so many similarities there. You know, I think in a lot of ways, those two teams, when they look at each other, they feel like they're looking in the mirror, you know? And so I think because of that, it's a little bit, I don't want to put it on this level yet, but it feels a little bit like the Ravens and the Steelers, did for all those years. You know, and I always thought that those were the most compelling matchups because of the similarities between the teams, and that similarity, kind of created contempt. I feel like the same type of thing, the same type of dynamics at work with the Niners and the Seahawks. So I'm going to go against you on that one. I think that's probably the more compelling of the two games on Sunday. God knows, we went through a little bit of a dog divisional weekend. Not great games this past weekend, but it set up just the headline matchups that I think everybody wanted to see.
Put your insider hat on. Where's Ken Whisenhunt end up as the next head coach?
I think the Lions are going to do what they need to do to get the deal done. I think he's a good fit, Detroit. I know, that there's a comfort level with Nashville for him, but I think that this has been, he's been Detroit's guy from the start, and it just makes sense on too many levels. First, the Lions are looking for a guy who can work with Matthew Stafford. Now, it doesn't necessarily need to be the head coach, but plus, if it is, he checks off that box. He's obviously worked with Kurt Warner. He worked with Ben Roethlisberger as a young player. So he's got experience working with quarterbacks. They want to bring in a guy who can change the culture. Well, I know it didn't. I know it fell apart at the end for Wiz there, but he really was largely responsible for changing who the Arizona Cardinals were.
Right.
We don't look at it in the same way as we did before he got there. And so he checks off that box for the Detroit Lions. And then there's, the matter of having relationships in the organization. And Martin Mayhew, their general manager, played with Ken Whisenhunt for the Redskins. So, I look at it, I see the familiarity. And if you're Whisenhunt, I think you look at that team and you see a team that's got cornerstone-type players who are 25, 26, 27 years old. You don't need to go in there and find, three or four franchise players. That's there. You just need to go in, fix the culture, fix the quarterback, and then get ancillary pieces. I know their salary cap's an issue. They've got to work through some things there, and it's not perfect. None of these jobs that are open are. But I certainly think the Lions job is a very, very attractive one. My guess is that's where Whisenhunt ends up.
Todd Bowles, is he going to leave out here with the Cardinals?
I think he really deserves his shot. he's very well respected throughout the league. Bill Parcells' disciple, who's an ex-player who has a lot of things going for him. Right now, I don't see one that lines up great for him. I think Dan Quinn probably winds up being the guy in Tennessee if they strike out on Whisenhunt. I think Zimmer probably gets the job in Minnesota. And then I think Bowles' shot might be with the Cleveland Browns. And it's hard to say where the Browns are going. I do know that there is the feeling on the outside looking in from a lot of other people around the NFL that job is radioactive.
Yeah.
And so, it's really, really hard to forecast what's going to happen in Cleveland. In fairness to them, they've interviewed five guys. They're going to interview a sixth today. They haven't made an offer to anyone yet. And, different people look at these jobs different ways. But I think because of the one and done with Kaczynski, and the feeling on the people in that building from people around the league, I think it's a very, very, very difficult one to forecast. And, maybe Bowles would be in the mix there. I don't see the Minnesota or Tennessee. I don't see Minnesota lining up quite right for him. But, who knows? That these things, I know he impressed them. And my sense is he probably goes back there and gets a second interview, but he's going to have to make up some ground on Mike Zimmer.
Last question, I'll let you go, and I appreciate your time. What do you make out of what's going on out here in Arizona and coming into this offseason? A lot has been focused on Fitz and restructuring his contract. Carson Palmer, is he the future? Do they need to draft a quarterback?
Right.
You put a laundry list together and look at the Arizona Cardinals this offseason from your view.
Well, I think the first thing, start with Fitz. You figure out how you're going to manage his salary. But I do think that, I think that he's a player that you probably want to hold on to. I mean, you start to see what having him and Michael Floyd across the field from each other, what they envisioned when the old regime drafted him or drafted Floyd. I'd say the number one thing is probably, building on what you have. And I think they've done a nice thing. Steve Keim got off to a great start with a really, really good. I mean, to get the production out of the rookie class they did, even though their first round pick was out, didn't play a snap.
Right.
I think it's a fantastic start. I think you still need some work on that offensive line. That's something that I think Cooper coming back will help. You know, and then at the quarterback position, I don't think Carson Palmer, you know, when 5-6 years from now, when you're assessing Bruce Arians, if he's still there, if he's not there, how the Bruce Arians era played out, I don't think Carson Palmer is going to be the quarterback that they hitched their wagon to long term. I think what Carson Palmer does, though, is he gives them the freedom to kind of pick their spot. So they don't need to force it. If they don't like the quarterbacks in this year's group, then I think they get the flexibility to maybe wait a year. And that's an important thing, because if you look at it, and go back a couple of years, and you remember the 2011 draft where teams reached for Jake Locker and Blaine Gabbert.
Christian Ponder,
yeah. Right?
Right, right.
Well, if you look at a couple of the teams that waited there, the Redskins completely punted on that class. They didn't like any of those guys. The Dolphins, same thing. Decided, you know, we don't love any of these guys. We're not going to hitch our wagon to any of them. Those two teams waited a year, wound up with Robert Griffin and Ryan Tannehill. Now, I'm not saying either of those guys are, you know, the next coming of Johnny Unitas, but I think we can certainly say at this point that they were better off having waited a year for those two guys rather than having drafted a Locker or a Gabbert or a Ponder. And so I think that flexibility is huge. When you're Steve Kime, you're looking at the 2014 quarterback draft class, you decide maybe you don't like any of those guys. Well, you know, then you've got the freedom to wait, because you've got a guy who you know have already proven that you can go out and win ball games with in Carson Palmer.
Good visiting with you as always. Great insight, Albert. Appreciate all the time. Thanks.
Anytime, guys.
Albert Breer, NFL Network Insider, with us for a couple of minutes. You can follow him on Twitter at Albert Breer. Other side, Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Here in our great state on Friday night, a parent came out of the stands, walked onto the court in the second quarter, and put his hands on an opposing coach. They had to clear the gym. Yeah, there's altercations that happen all the time in sports, but this went to a whole different level. I'll talk to her about that. Also, U of A being number one, 17-0. What's wrong with Jahi Carson? And much more with Paula Bovin. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sussmat.
News and Notes, Paula Bovin, AZ Central sports columnist, my friend. She, like me, we were out at high school games on Friday night being parents, watching our kids play sports. I was at a soccer game at Gilbert where a coach didn't leave the field even though he had a red card. And eventually he was escorted out of the stadium. I went to a basketball game thereafter with my daughter and Perry and Basha, and there were police everywhere to make sure that nothing got out of hand. I mean, a lot of police. And then I started getting text messages about a fan that walked out of the stands at Dobson High School and shoved a coach of the opposing team during the game. And so it's off the beaten path. I'm going to get over to U of A being number one. I'm going to get into some other stuff with Paula, but I want to start with you because you wrote about this. I wrote about this. You've now been in this parental spot of going to high school events, and we see unruly behavior at pro games and college games. Are you seeing things at the high school level that concern you in regards to parents?
Absolutely. You know, and I get it. When I have morphed from the journalist to the parent, you get very emotionally attached to what's happening on the floor. You're concerned for your kid, blah, blah, blah. But I have been stunned at how emotionally invested parents are getting, I think, for the wrong reasons, because sometimes it's about playing time, and often it is. Sometimes it's about the officials. You know, do these parents think the other kids are going to the NBA or the NFL or whatever? It's not happening. I mean, it's such a rare percentage. I just am stunned at the direction. And I thought you brought up an interesting point. I read your blog about sort of how the club scene has affected the high school scene.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm seeing is every parent thinks that they can at least get the college scholarship taken care of, but it's the coach's fault. And sometimes it is. I mean, I've heard of club coaches being allowed to coach high school. There's a club coach coaching a high school girls soccer team where he's not letting the seniors or juniors really play much,
right,
from what I'm hearing. And he's building a program to win 2 or 3 years from now, so he's playing primarily freshmen. And I don't think that's right at all. I don't think there's any place for that in the high school level. But I do think that the whole hey, playing club is better than playing high school mentality has taken over, that playing for your high school is stupid because the officiating stinks and my coach is my English teacher. He's not as good as my club coach. My club coach is telling me high school's a joke. I'm hearing that more and more, which really bothers me.
Totally bothers me too. And I believe there's a place for both. And I talked to Sean Miller about this a couple weeks ago, and I asked him if he's only recruiting now from the club scene, and he said it's not. It's a big part of it. But he also, there are some players where they still are committed to the high school level and everything else. But, yeah, it's bothersome. And I think there is something the high school sort of scene offers that the club scene can't, and it's this sort of innocence. It's about representing your high school and wearing the school colors. And I know a lot of that innocence is lost because of what the club scene has provided. But I still think there's a great sort of bonding thing that doesn't happen in the club scene, because these club guys are bouncing left to right and, you know, going from one team to another. And I speak as someone who has experienced both, and my son's in a very good club program. But I think there's something great to be said about playing for your high school team, whatever sport it is.
One last question on this topic, and we'll move on. Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist with Brad Sussmat. You weren't there. I was not there. I spoke to some people that were there. You may have as well. But I think that the dad, at some point, a dad needs to have, or the parent needs to have charges put on them. And the kid, and I've changed on this one through the years, the kid should be removed from the team. Because, yeah, that sounds very harsh, but you have to stop this stuff now. If all it is the dad is not allowed to come to a game,
right?
That's not enough. And if the kid, hey, it's your parents. Your parents did harm to you,
right,
by coming out and doing what they did. Do you agree with me or disagree with me?
I disagree with you, Brad. And you're, I mean, I understand where you're going. There has to be some other deterrent, but I can only imagine that. And I was not at that game, but that daughter whose father was involved had to be horrified. And probably her teammates were looking at her, or people were looking at what was happening. And I just don't think she should have to pay the price, because you're talking sometimes 14, 15, 16-year-olds. Now, you know, I don't know what the other option is if you can somehow get security or police involved or something like that. But that is too harsh for me, for someone who really is an innocent victim in this.
Okay, but Paula, police should not have to be patrolling high school basketball games. There are other places that resources should go rather than a sporting event. And this is what I wrote about, until we get to a point where you can control this stuff, because this isn't the first time a gym has been cleared out. They had to clear the gym out. Everybody's Friday night was ruined, I would imagine. If you need to start playing games in front of nobody, because you just can't control the one or two idiots, and right, it's like being in math class or English class. Your basketball game at high school, you're just going to play in a gym and come home and tell mom or dad I scored 25. Then that's what needs to happen. I know this sounds way over the top, but I don't see any other recourse.
Well, another option may be, I think, when, you know, that coaches have these parents, and some already do. I know at our club level we do. I don't know about the high school scene. Have parents sign code of conducts, and in that code of conduct say, hey, if you go on the floor, if you do this, maybe you have to contribute X to the school's athletic department, or maybe your child will not play the next couple games or something. Maybe something in print ahead of time that they have to sign. Maybe that's the deterrent. Maybe that guy, if he had signed something, would have thought, okay, I'm not doing this.
Couple other questions. So Carl Bradford's turning pro, at least according to Twitter. Liz Mullen tweeted out that he has signed with Athletes First. How big a blow is this to Todd Graham?
I think it's a big blow. I mean, they're suffering some big time losses on defense, and that's one more hole they're going to have to fill. On the other side, I actually think it's a pretty good move for Bradford, because I think once he gets to the combine, sort of the athleticism you might not appreciate during games or watching, you know, video or whatever, is going to come out in that combine. And I think he's really going to help himself.
I'm reading that Tanaka, the pitcher the Diamondbacks are pursuing,
mm-hmm,
that his wife is now getting involved in this.
Oh, I have not heard this. How is that happening?
So the wife is like talking to him about what it, and it's very early. I just saw a couple tweets about this and some stories I'm going to follow up on after the show. But evidently the wife is now starting to weigh in. So from a female perspective, can you please write something to the wife? Dear Mrs. Tanaka, here's what we have in Arizona. We have a big hole to the north. It's called the Grand Canyon. We have terrific schools. We don't have the 405 freeway here in Phoenix. So, you know, I think there's something there to start working over the wife, because I'd like to see Tanaka come here. I know it's a long shot, but 40-60, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm not going to write anything, Brad. I think you were joking. But, you know, I think this is someone who's probably not that knowledgeable about what Arizona is actually about or enough of it. There's obviously very big positives to playing here versus playing, what do they want, like Florida or California or whatever?
Or New York.
Or New York. Yeah, you know.
We don't have a subway here. We don't need a subway here. We have light rail.
Yeah, that's right. Come on. Oh, yeah, we have great mass transportation here, Brad.
Right.
Well, yeah, right. No, it's, you know, I mean, it is her spouse. I think she's allowed to weigh in, but I hope that, and I would imagine that there are other people like agents and Tanaka's own opinion that are going to influence this as well.
I kind of like having Mrs. Tanaka weighing in.
yeah, I bet you do.
Anything else going on your mind that you see across the Arizona landscape today?
You know what I've been wrestling with over the weekend, because I've just been thinking of all this high school stuff, and then I was thinking about transfers, and I'm just wondering if it's time for Arizona to go the way of California and the way of, I think it was Florida or Pennsylvania, and just allow transfers to open enrollment and transfer, because I feel like now that when the AIA makes these decisions, it's very subjective and it's not consistent. And so I was thinking I was going to call California today. This is the first year that they've done it, and to see how it's going. So that's on my mind.
I kind of like that.
All right.
I'll let you go off that. Stay well.
All right, Brad.
Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. On the other side, so this Tony Bosch guy, I was texting Eric last night. Tony Bosch was more compelling to me than most of the playoff games over the weekend. I didn't think the playoff games were really that dramatic. They were okay. It wasn't like I was gripped. The Saints, you know, the Saints came out and that game was over pretty early, I thought. It wasn't, I don't know, it just didn't really resonate with me like I thought. And there's some other things that are more interesting I'll get to on the other side. Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com. That's our website. We're Arizona-centric. On Twitter, at Brad Sussmat, and of course, White Mountain Radio. Sports360AZ.com, Brad Sussmat with you, White Mountain Radio, and of course on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. Tomorrow we're doing the show from Grand Canyon University. It'll be good to be out there, gcu.edu. Our Facebook question today, Sean Miller's Wildcats, 17-0, the best start in the history of the U of A. Will U of A be undefeated heading into the NCAA tournament? Yes or no? Head over to facebook.com/sports360az.com. Like our page, share your input. This segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Last week, we were in Los Angeles. We're on the road. That's what we like to do, is take the show on the road. As mentioned, tomorrow we'll be over at GCU, later in the week down in Tucson. Driving around, that's what I do. I put a lot of miles on my vehicles because I like to go places. I like to be on the move. How about you? Do you get out of your office, get out of your house, and walk to a vehicle and say, oh no, I got to get in this thing again. And this is broken and that's broken and this warning light is on and that warning light is on. I've got all these miles rolling up and my kids need a vehicle. Are you in that space? Then stop into Santan Ford or just go online. Go online to Santan Ford, santanford.com. General Manager Tim Hovick and his staff do a terrific job. You may need service. John Bernath, one of the best in the service business in the Valley. In fact, in the state. Santan Ford, wide variety, wide selection, good people, people that are into sports just like you. You wouldn't be listening, watching me, consuming the show if you weren't into sports. Check out Santan Ford for that new vehicle, that used vehicle. That's at Santan Ford, Santan Ford, where it is all about you. You can just go to Sports360AZ and click on the top of the page, and you'll click on Santan Ford. So a little more on Tony Bosch. I'm watching 60 Minutes last night because while I'm tired of A-Rod on one hand, on the other hand, the guy that turned A-Rod into A-Roid or whatever term you want to use, he showed up last night. Now, Eric, Tony Bosch, Pedro, I think, was the first guy that had done something with Tony Bosch that I can recall.
I believe you're correct.
And Pedro Gomez, who's with us all the time, Valley resident, did a great job with him. But the A-Rod story just kind of had me glossed over until I'm watching this character last night. Here is Tony Bosch on 60 Minutes last night on who injected, who stuck the needle into A-Rod's ass.
I was just scared of needles. So at times he would ask me to inject.
You've injected him?
Yes.
Personally?
Personally.
Tony, getting it done. Tony Bosch, what banned substances did A-Rod take?
Testosterone, insulin growth factor, one, human growth hormone, and some different forms of peptides.
All of them banned?
All of them banned.
And he knew that?
Yes, he did.
And you knew that?
And I knew that.
So why did A-Rod trust this Tony Bosch character?
I was very good at what I did. I had a track record. I have been doing this for many years. If you had the knowledge that I had, the experience that I had, and then you know the truth about the testing and the flaws, it was almost a cakewalk, actually.
A cakewalk?
Yeah.
To beat the system?
To beat the system.
To cheat?
To cheat.
Yeah, so, I mean, Scott Pelley's trying to get him to talk about being a cheater and all that. So that guy doesn't care. He doesn't care. They had bank transactions of $49,000 being made last night. They had all these text messages between A-Rod and this Tony Bosch guy on, hey, tomorrow I have a big game. What do I do? And the guy would text back, you need to do this, you need to do that. I thought it was really interesting. Eric, did you see the part where they were talking about the urine samples?
I don't remember seeing that part.
Okay, so Tony Bosch told A-Rod that when you give a sample, that don't start with the beginning of your stream and don't finish with your stream, but just use the middle of your stream because that is lower in all the other parts of when you are giving a sample.
Wow. So, yeah, this guy clearly knew all the loopholes for A-Rod.
Right, right. So I'm hearing that. I'm thinking, well, that's pretty good knowledge to know. I'll put that in my back. No, I'm just kidding.
The next time I see you on HGH, we'll discuss
right, right,
that.
Right, right,
yeah, we do drug tests here at the studio from
absolutely,
time to time,
so. Every day. But when Tony Bosch, Scott Pelley was trying to be the hard journalist, heavy-handed, how could you do this to the game of baseball, and how can you take it down this path? And Tony Bosch was like, look, if you're standing in the box and the pitcher on the mound you know is taking, and the catcher is taking, and the third baseman is taking, and they all have an advantage, and you don't have an advantage, am I sympathetic? Is he right? No, he's not right. It's against the rules. But is he factual in that there's other players that are doing this?
No
question.
Yeah,
because the chemists are ahead of the testers. You know, when Bud Selig, when the 60 Minutes report finished last night, and they went into the on-camera about it. Major League Baseball is very proud to say that they have the toughest, most stringent drug testing policy that's out there. Sounds all well and good. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to go buy tickets because baseball doesn't have a bunch of cheaters. I don't think most of you care. I really don't. I don't think most of you care. Most of you want to have your entertainment dollar. Do you care what an NFL player is taking to recover? Do you care what a basketball player does to recover?
It's become white noise. It really, I mean,
doesn't it? It is.
And the only reason this story was actually compelling is because the story was taken to another level. We have this guy who completely ratted out A-Rod, and it went so deep, even his ex-girlfriend was getting threatened with these, like, random text messages from A-Rod's finger quote people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's okay. When the movie comes out, let me know. I'll go down to Hargan's. You've got my $8.
Right.
I want that. That is the part that's most intriguing. Not A-Rod cheated. Of course, A-Rod cheated.
Yeah, of course he did.
We all know that by now. But now you're starting to see the trickle down and hearing the real backstory as what happened.
I mean, the text messages last night, there were hundreds of them. And my thing was to sit and see that A-Rod would hitch his wagon to this guy. Eric, I don't know if you've had guys in your life that have saddled up alongside of you that said, hey, I can really help you out. And you found out later they couldn't help you out at all. They just wanted to be around you for some other reason.
A few.
Yeah.
Not many. Nothing to the scope of a million-dollar athlete, multi-million-dollar athlete. But yeah, a few from here and there.
Sure. And I've had the same sort of situation through the year. I've let go of a couple of agents that were flat-out weasels. they just had no good interest for Brad in mind. It was everything in their mind.
Yep, their agenda.
Their agenda. And so we see that with professional athletes today. We see guys today that get fleeced all the time that we run into when they're done playing. And it's, yeah, I tried the car wash business. I had 20 of them. And what do you know? It didn't go so well. Or my wife invested in 93 church's chickens. And I'm not exaggerating. This was one professional athlete that I know whose wife invested in 93 chicken shops. And what do you know? They lost everything. And he wanted to come back. That story is really interesting. I don't know where it's going to go. He can say, I'm going to sit out for a year. Will some team say, we're going to bring him back from a freak standpoint and just getting attention on our beleaguered franchise?
He wants 800 home runs. That's his. He loves these milestones, but he doesn't realize that. But he doesn't care, but it's going to. Everything he does is a joke from here on out.
Sure, sure. He is the carnival act. That's all. He and Dennis Rodman are just the carnival act, and he will show up. If Alex Rodriguez walked into the studio right now and said, I want to tell my story, it would be against me to say, no, I'm not going to give you a microphone. But in the back of my mind, it'd be like, really? Seriously? I mean, oh my gosh, think of the ratings, think of this, think of that. You get to a point where we get used so much by guys, we end up being fools. Herb Sendek's in an interesting spot this week. ASU has gotten off to about a 500 start in Pac-12 conference play. I don't think they've done anything special. They beat Washington State and they beat USC, two teams that are less than them. They lost to Washington, which is about even with them or maybe a little less. And they ended up beating Washington State. And that's it. They haven't done anything that I would say is too over the top. So Herb Sendek is getting his team ready to go down to Tucson this week. I happen to like Herb. I think Herb actually coaches for the right reasons. There is a little bit of student athlete, actually quite a bit when it comes to Herb Sendek. But to think that the program is where it's going to be, needs to be in terms of being an NCAA team every year, year in and year out, no, it's not there. UCLA toyed with them last night. It wasn't really a game last night. And so they're going to go to Tucson this week, and nobody is expecting Herb Sendek's team to come out and win that game. They're expecting it to be blowout city. Now, Johnny Dawkins, I think, is on the hot seat at Stanford. He hasn't had a great season so far. They split up in Oregon, and the Johnny Dawkins watch is on hold a little bit. And I'm not saying that the Herb watch is on because I don't sense that basketball really is that big of a deal to Michael Crow. It's just, if you want to go places and do some special things, then come up with that signature victory this season. Have they come up with a signature victory yet this year that you look at? The UNLV game was nice. It was nice.
Marquette, that's a good win.
Marquette. Yeah. I mean, I like their preseason schedule, but within the conference itself, Eric, because you're not playing UCLA or USC again unless you meet them in the Pac-12 tournament. They don't come out here this year, which is just ridiculous, by the way. So there's some stuff there as we get towards Thursday, and Jaheed just has to play better. We can't sit here and just say, yeah, I've seen the kid since his freshman year at Mesa or Mountain Point and then Mesa, and he's been terrific, and we all love Jaheed. Yeah, I'm a fan of his, but he hasn't played well. It's not 100% on, well, look at what the other team is doing. Give them credit. I am, but it's part of it's on Jaheed Carson to play better. Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com on White Mountain Radio.